Hey guys, welcome to my pod, Girls Know Nothing. My name is Sharon Gafka, and you might recognise me from Series 7 of Love Island. This is a podcast based on female positivity, girl chat to discuss key topics. Make sure you tune in every week across Spotify and Apple Podcasts, and make sure you follow and leave a review whenever you listen, because every little helps. So really excited to have the first episode of Girls Know Nothing, and who better to have than my fae,
my bestie.
So obviously, by the time this episode goes out, it is the Love Island final.
It's the final,
baby. Can you believe it's gone so quickly?
Can you believe it's been a year, like, since we were in that situation? But I mean, me at the final, I was like, wow, this is tapped.
I had heart palpitations watching it for you.
I mean, yeah, it was. It's such a mad experience, isn't it? When you think about how far you come in a year, like, and how quick time goes. It's a bit of my Devonshire coming out. But I feel like they're going to be so over it now as well. Like, when you're in there for that length of time, they're going to be so ready to come out. There's only so much you can talk about. There's only so many times you talk about each other's relationship, especially when there is no drama going on.
Well, we watched.
They're so ready to come home.
Well, we did watch last night's episode, didn't we?
Yeah, it was dead.
And we didn't. It wasn't particularly interesting. Like, you can just tell that the Islanders are a bit over it now.
Yeah, and they get all the same dates and like nothing's new there. Someone will say they love each other. Someone will get in a relationship. Obviously, I got in a relationship on my date when I was stood in a pond. Like,
the tweets we saw about the dates, like how that they were so, like, people were saying they were so grateful that they'd patterned up the budgeting for the dates this year.
Like, I
they made you and Teddy stand in a pond.
I got the deadest date ever.
I found it hilarious. Just because I knew, watching it, what your thoughts would be as I was watching it.
Well, no, when we saw it, I actually really liked it. But then I realised that I was stood on a plank in a piece of, in the water with petals. Like, it's just a very bizarre scenario. There was no bubbles. There was no, like, it wasn't like a jacuzzi or a spa break. I can honestly say I've never stood in a swimming pool with somebody. Like, they might as well just left us in the villa together and put some petals in the villa.
They tried to make it romantic.
It was very cute. Like, it was very, like, Bali-like. But there's so much pressure on them. But, I mean, like, this year, I think whoever gets the Colosseum is going to win.
Do you think Ekin-Su and Davide are going to win then?
I think so. I'm not really, like, I don't really know. I can't really say that I, like, love, like, any couple. I love, like, individuals in there, but can't say I love couples. I think they're going to win just because they've got, like, a massive following.
I think they'll win, but then I don't think they win because I feel like people that watch Love Island love the underdog.
No, I don't feel like they do. I feel like I was an underdog the whole way through and I didn't win, so...
But, like, you know, with when we watched, like, Series 5?
I mean, what the fuck?
And everyone thought Tommy and Molly were going to win. So they, like, the public were like, no, and then ended up...
No, it was always going to be Amber Gill that won that series.
Do you think? Because I, from Twitter, I remember everybody talking about how Molly and Tommy were easily going to win, and then they didn't.
I don't remember. Anyway.
Enough of their series.
Enough of their series. Like, they're coming out now. I can't wait to meet them.
Coming back to us instead.
Anyway, back to us.
We did watch our first two episodes together, didn't we?
Oh my God, it was so bad.
I couldn't remember any of it. And then we were watching it back and we were like, I don't even look like the same person.
No, you do. You look stunning in it.
I don't think I look the same. I think I'm, like, a completely different person.
No, you looked amazing. But I feel like when we watched it back, it was so weird to see it because there's so many bits that I just completely forgotten about. Like, completely forgot. Like, we were like, oh my God, do you remember saying that? Or, like, do you remember being there or doing that?
I remember watching back bits back in. And I remember, actually, it kind of gave me flashbacks a little bit. Yeah. Like, my tissue stuffed in my bikini because I forgot about it because I was sweating like a pig the whole time during the first coupling and how awkward it was because I just didn't want to step forward for anyone.
And it's so weird how quickly it's shown on TV when that whole process of people coming down, like the boys coming down, was so long. I remember us all being there, we were like begging for a drink, we all had a headache. Like,
oh,
it was so long.
And the eyes were watering because of the stupid fucking reflectors.
Yeah, and then obviously they show, like, when you have a new couple, they, like, show you in your couple. But all those photos were done after we'd done all the coupling. It's so weird how it pans out.
It would have been a great drinking game if we played a shot for every time Faye got into a new couple during the first episode.
Oh, no. I know.
And you look so unimpressed in every single one. You're just like, I hate all of these people.
The thing is, though, like, I'm not like one of the, like, I felt really awkward. Like, I felt really weird. And then I was just like, oh, I just don't want to be, I don't want to be here.
I think the whole first episode was a bit much for me. And then watching it back.
Yeah, but you didn't step forward for anyone.
I stepped forward for Brad.
I don't think you did. I think it was me, Kaz and Lib.
I just didn't like them, clearly. I mean, my opinion's not changed.
I don't think you did stand forward for Brad. Or maybe it was you and not Kaz then.
I think it was me and not Kaz.
Okay.
Yeah, Kaz didn't step forward for Brad.
Oh, okay.
So but then it was more like a deer in headlights moment where I was like, I'm so over this. Like, get me out of the sun. I mean, we obviously don't know the time when we're in the villa.
Yeah.
But for me, it felt like we were there for easily 6 hours trying to do the first coupling.
It would have been about, yeah, I would have said between 5 and 6 hours. Like, because it was the whole day, wasn't it? And then we literally got ready like that. Because I remember I didn't take my makeup. I hardly took my makeup off. I literally just took my face off and redone my foundation for the night. So I remember we didn't have long to get ready for the evening. And then it was like the first, like, party.
The slow-mo dancing.
With people you've never met. I just remember feeling so uncomfortable because I'm really bad with new people anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, I say that, like, in my job, I'm so used to, well, my old job, I was so used to meeting new people and talking to them. But, like, I think because I've got, like, a bad perception of people and, like, I have got really bad trust issues.
Yeah.
Like, I just, like, really hate talking to new people, like, of my age. Actually, and then I realised in that moment, I was like, fuck, I've come on a dating show and I really dislike people. And then I felt like, and then I was like, with the girls, I was like, oh no, like, are they going to like me? Are they going to get me? And, like, you've openly said to me previously that you didn't think that we'd get on.
Yeah, when I first met you, I was like, I'm going to fucking hate this girl.
Yeah.
I can tell already, but, like, you're my favourite person from the whole series. So,
yeah, no.
Like, that changed. The opinion of you that I had when I first met you is probably the only opinion that's changed. Like, everybody else has pretty much stayed the same.
Yeah. Like, it's very, and I think that's me as a person. I'm very closed off and very, like, my face is very, like, I'm not interested in speaking to you until you get to know me. And then when people get to know me, they're like, oh, actually, you're all right. And I'm like, I don't think I'm that much of a bell end, but, you know.
I mean, I'm going to, no comment. No, obviously, like, you spoke about how you have, like, trust issues when you meet new people.
Yeah.
Especially people our age. Like, when you leave the show, you meet tons of new people all the time. Yeah. And, like, trying to navigate this industry, I find, is so hard. Especially when you leave a show like Love Island. You know, we've always made jokes between us and, like, Hannah about how we feel like it's a massive, like, rat race to try and get yourself into management, trying to make the most of your year before the next, like, set of Islanders come out. And I know, like, we've always been very career-driven women. We've always had our own path. So when we came out, we didn't want to navigate too far away from what we were used to. Mm-hmm. We wanted to take that and turn it into something else. And I know you experienced it coming out the show, like, about what stereotypically Love Islanders do. And how hard it was to find somebody that would believe in you enough to be able to do what you wanted. Like, how did you find trying to navigate that whole atmosphere, like, the whole industry?
I feel like it was so hard because you came out of the IR series and, you know, you were told by ITV that you don't need management. You don't need management. Actually, you know, this year's the Islanders, most of them have gone in with management. But the thing I don't really, doesn't really sit well with me with that is that they know what they're coming out to. And I feel like that's when you can kind of differentiate. Is that the right word?
Differentiate.
So I feel like you can tell if they're going in for careers or if they're going in for love. Like, I didn't go in with a manager, you didn't go in with a manager. So I feel like with that, I came out and I had no idea what I could do. All I knew is that I never wanted to leave the world behind that I had before. And I found it really, like, everyone was like to me, like, or in the villa, like, people would talk about deals and stuff. And I'd be like, I don't want to do fast fashion. I don't want to do these deals that everyone's talking about. Like, I'm not really, it's not my interest. Do you know what I mean? So then I found it really hard. And when you come out, a lot of, you know, we had it all over Zoom. And I think I had about 12 Zooms with different managements. Then I met 3 managements, I think, and me and Teddy definitely wanted to go with the same management because we'd heard stories that, you know, if you go with different managements, they can kind of try and get you to go separate ways for your careers. So, you know, it was so hard to find somebody that actually believed in what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Because as soon as I said, like, I want to do housing, I want to talk about housing, I'm obsessed with home interiors, I'm obsessed with property and dogs, like the guide dogs, that's my passions. That's been my passions for 10 years. I don't want to shy away from it. And everyone kind of was like, I don't really know what to do with you. So, and because I said no to a lot, I also felt like, because I wasn't just being a money grabber, I also wasn't probably the easiest client or easiest person to manage. But it's like, who do you trust with your whole life? That's the problem, yeah. Isn't it? It's not just trust. It's not like just your manager, like at work, where you go to work and they're there 9 to 5.
You ask
them if you can go to the toilet. Yeah, like, it's, and I also came from a job, my managers were incredible people. You know, they were amazing. They put me on a sabbatical to go into Love Island. It wasn't like I lost my job. I came back out and, you know, my boss said to me, look, I would be being selfish by having you back.
Yeah.
Go and explore this new world. If you ever need to come back or you ever want to come back, your job is always here for you. So I've always got that option.
Yeah. So. And I think this is one thing that, this is one side of Love Island people don't really talk about, like finding management, because everybody automatically assumes that when you leave, you're instantly loaded. You have this really lavish lifestyle. And I think it's massively overplayed because you do have to, like, and I said this, well, I did an interview with like a newspaper recently and they said, what's your biggest advice to people leaving this year? And I said, it's to, you need to find a manager that you can wholeheartedly trust with everything in your life.
Yeah.
Like, because it's not just your job. It is your livelihood. Like, you need to navigate, like, you know, if you don't focus or find something you're really passionate about or just oversell yourself, you'll be done and out in weeks.
I think as well, the problem is like you, when you come out of Love Island, you don't actually know what to expect from this world. So you really, your manager isn't just your manager that gets you work. You hope that they navigate you through this new world. You know, management tell you to do one thing, and because they tell you to do it, you're like, oh yeah, that's what's best for me. But that isn't always the case. Like, that isn't the case. And actually, you've got to make sure that, I know for a fact now, my management now, I'd give her access to my Instagram. I know for a fact she would do nothing wrong to me. Everything is in my best interest. You know, there's been work that's come in for me and she said, Faye, they'll pay you X, but I don't think for you it's the right job. And I'm like,
yeah,
good. And that's what I want to hear.
But that's the thing though, because obviously they make their money from you making money.
Yeah.
And like, obviously both of us have ambassadorships with really big charities. Yeah. You know, you said you work with the guide dogs. I'm coming up with work with Refuge,
yay,
domestic violence charity for women. That's completely unpaid.
Unpaid.
And this is what people don't understand. They think that we only do this stuff because it's clout.
Yeah.
But and we get money for it, but we don't. Like, this is genuinely passions for both of us. And we both have reasons why we want to do it. And I think because you're not getting paid to do it, a lot of managers just don't want to touch you if you're going to do
unpaid
lots
work.
Of unpaid work.
Yeah, well, I mean, with the guide dogs, I already volunteered for them for 5 years before Love Island. So what now, because I found this new platform, what now I expect a charity to pay me? That's not going to... I managed to find time in my previous life and I absolutely adored doing it. And that's why they came to me and said, we want to make you a campaign star, you know, and it is completely unpaid. However, you know, the guide dogs have got me out of some really dark moments when I've found this newfound fame, because I've always been able to go back to them. I've been able to go down to Exeter and just go in and see the girls who I know and love and adore. And I feel like as well with charity work, it's not praised enough. Like, I came out of Love Island and doing guide dogs was my first collab.
Yeah.
There was no press that wanted to pick up on it. There was nobody that wanted to shout from the hilltops about it because it wasn't seen as successful.
Or stereotypical Love Islandery, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the thing, because I feel like a lot of the time the public and the press are like banging on about how they want islanders that are different, that don't just do the same deals, that don't just do like the same thing that people before them have done. And then when people come along that are different or do something different, they're really not that interested because it doesn't work in their interest.
Yeah, well, it's hard, isn't it? Because I mean, I was the first Love Islander to ever come out and my first campaign on my first collab be of a charity. I was the first Love Islander to ever do that.
Yeah.
I didn't hear, I don't know, everyone says to me, oh, I haven't heard about it. I didn't hear about it.
I mean, I'm really good friends with you and I wouldn't have heard about it if it wasn't
for me.
From you.
That is the sad truth of it. So then you push Love Islanders down another road. You know, we're very lucky, we're strong women. So I don't care about my likes on Instagram. I hardly engage on my Instagram. I actually find Instagram very hard to do. And I actually don't really enjoy the Instagram side of things because I never done Instagram before. I went in with 1,000 followers. I come out of 1.2. Like, I don't think people care about what I'm doing every day, but they do.
Yeah.
And I actually really struggle with Instagram. Yeah, I love doing guide dogs and stuff, but yet I feel like people don't want to see that. So then I really restrain from putting it on my Instagram. And it's so hard. Yeah,
it's a double-edged sword because everyone's banging on about wanting that, but then not engaging with that. And you're just like, you're now conflicted with, do you just do anything to get the bag and for fun this glamorous lifestyle, or do you do something that's really genuine to you?
It's so hard because then other islanders have come out of our series and other series, and you know, they've got deals with clothing collabs, and they've got deals, you know, they've had quite a lot of deals come in, and it's sung about in the press, oh, they're going to be multi-millionaires by the end of the year. No, they got paid 8 figures or 6 figures or 5 figures, like. And that is seen as good. That's seen as positive, and that is seen as success. Yeah. I don't judge my success based on how much money I've got in my bank account.
Well, money comes and goes, doesn't it, really?
I judge it on how happy I am. And if I'm not happy, I'm not successful. So why would I do jobs that I'm not happy with? And that isn't me.
I think it's just like, it's again, when going back to what you said about being strong women.
Mm.
And, you know, doing what we want to do, despite the fact that we're told we shouldn't.
Yeah.
And about how, you know, the whole point of this podcast is girls know nothing. But we're actually, you know, we've managed to navigate 26, 27 years of our life.
Yeah.
Been very successful, owned our own properties, own our own cars, like do our own thing. And so, like, why all of a sudden are we going to start listening to somebody else? And that was the same with on the show, though, wasn't it?
Like, it was very much the
because
same.
We were the strong women, the strong characters. And, you know, when we watched back our first two episodes, we were like, wow, the way that some of these boys were talking about us behind our backs was actually vile.
It was and disgraceful.
It's for no other reason apart from the fact that they're intimidated by the fact that we know what we want to get out of life. We're not afraid to go for it.
And what makes me laugh, though, about that is that they didn't actually air what the boys proper, like, you know, there I know for a fact there was a problem with you, and the words that were spoken was that you were too opinionated.
Yeah. But like, it easily, quite a lot of the lads that were involved in those conversations have made TikToks since leaving the villa saying that they were so grateful that everything they said didn't get aired.
Yeah.
So if that's what got aired, what didn't?
Mm.
And it's one of those things where, you know, I find that women now like have to make themselves feel smaller or make themselves fit into a box to be able to make themselves deemed successful in a show like Love Island or deemed successful in a relationship. Like, you can't be...
I know. And like, there was a comment I know that we heard, and actually I was like, wow, that's really actually quite nasty, was a comment that was made. You know, the more that somebody saw me, the less attractive they thought I was. Right, okay, so you thought I was attractive on an initial look.
Yeah.
And actually, what now, because I'm a strong woman, or is it because, you know, you're spending more time with me, I'm now not as attractive, like, and you're saying that in a boys' chat instead of just saying that to my face. And that's what I really despise in this world, is if you've got something to say, please don't go and say it to anyone else but the person that you need to say it about.
Yeah.
Because I will rip you. I will literally rip you apart.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need you. But that just, for me, states men have so much more growth that they need to do. You know, they can talk behind women's backs and it's seen as okay. Women do it, it's seen as bitchy. You know, I'm not about that. Like, you know, man or woman, come and say it to me.
Yeah, and it's like, actually, you know, there's 2 points on it. Well, when I did an interview recently, I was asked about misogyny in Love Island.
Yeah.
And I said, well, you know, it's really hard for producers to actually kind of weed that out of the male casting,
yeah,
because it's a societal issue. But then there's another thing as well, as strong independent women, we're easily villainized. If people got to see the whole unedited raw videos of everything that was said, I think that the perception of both of us off the back of that conversation would be very different.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of people don't like me and don't understand me because where I raise my voice, so I shout a lot. I shout a lot anyway. Like, I'm a very loud person. Yeah. Like, I am loud. However, when my emotions heighten, so does my voice. My voice just goes louder and louder and louder, and I can't help that. However, if I tell somebody to F off like this, or if I shout it, I'm still saying the same thing. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not changing anything about it. So I feel like it's so hard, because as soon as they make a man a villain in the whole production, obviously we have charities get involved, and, you know, there's a lot more about it. And then as soon as, so they find it easier to make women the villain.
Yeah.
Because, you know, some women are, you know, it can, we can be seen as the weaker sex. And because of that, it's seen as okay, which isn't the case. You know, like, I take full responsibility for what I've done in that show. Full responsibility. I hold my hands up. I did things very wrong. However, what I was saying was right. Like, yeah, in my head and in my heart, what I was saying, did I say it the right way? Absolutely not. You know, but we learn.
But I think as well, like, there's an element of responsibility. Like, yes, you hold your hand up to things that you've done and things you said. Mm. There's an element of responsibility in other areas of the production. Just because, for example, people forget that you have no access to your comfort blankets, your friends, your family.
Nothing.
You're not allowed to leave. So you're forced to be with people. So, like, in the real world, if you said something that upset me, I would just distance myself from you until I was ready to talk about it.
Yeah.
You don't have space or time to do that in a show like that. So when you have all of your natural comforts taken away from you and all your emotions are put onto the extreme, sometimes the way you react to things in that show is not how you would react to things in real life. And I think that's something that people forget about. And, you know, like, you with the Ofcom complaints. But, like, in a weird way, I kind of felt like they knew that was going to happen. But it was publicity in a way.
But I, again, you know, there was a lot of people that complained that I have still got messages and messages and messages from that told me they didn't complain about me. They didn't complain about me. They complained about how ITV had manipulated a situation and put Teddy in a situation. However, when the headline came out, it was that all the complaints had been put on me. And it was my actions that had caused the complaints.
You know, like, I know we've had conversations, we've sat here and talked about the Ofcom complaints, and I know that we've made between us jokes about it. Obviously, a lot of things that people forget about until something really serious happens is the mental health of Islanders. And, you know, one thing I really want to know is about how you felt coming off a show like Love Island, going from 1,000 followers to 1.2 million and then hearing about 25,000 Ofcom complaints?
25,000 of them. I feel like when you come off of the show and you see that, at first I thought it was a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay, like, that's fine. And then the thing that shocked me the most is when I left to go into Love Island, I'm closest to my sister, like the closest I could ever be. And, you know, she's a healthy size 12 girl. She walked into that villa on Friends and Family Day. She had like her hair and it was blonde. And she was like a size 6. And I was like, what has happened? Like, I knew she was going through a tough time anyway. And I was like, okay, like, obviously she'd been through a breakup. She's obviously done breakup diet. Okay. And then I came out and then I realised what had happened. I had caused that stress on my sister.
Oh, babe.
Like, I had done that. And that is so hard. Like, that was my hardship. I think it was hard, you know, to, like, see my mum and my dad and, like, knowing the pain that I'd caused them. But they were like, look, we love you. Like, it's not that big. We've heard you have these arguments. Like, we've heard you before. But normally I would be that way to them.
Yeah.
I would ring them and shout and scream. They, you know, they calm me down. You know, if I've walked out of a job before and I've been really upset, or, you know, I've had an argument with a boyfriend, I'd always leave. And then I'd go to my mum and dad, or I'd go to my sisters, and they just felt like they couldn't help me. And, you know, when I go on, the words that my sister had to block on my Instagram, and you look, it's fine that they've been blocked, but my sister had to see them words.
first
before she could block them. And you know, it's when you get told enough that your life isn't worth it and you know you shouldn't be here, like that takes its toll. And I was in such a dark place and no one can, like, I've only recently been able to talk about it, you know, because actually I am still here.
Yeah, of course.
And but no, now the other islanders are coming out. I feel like a sense of responsibility to be like, actually, this is what you can do to people. I'm still here so I can say that story. But there was some really dark days.
I remember, like, no, feeling the exact same way you did. Like, you know, when you leave the show and you speak to ITV press and they tell you everything that's happened. And I remember being told about a joint statement that our families and friends have put out about death threats being received and hate. And I remember sitting there bawling my eyes out because I was worried about my family, but my mum doesn't know how to turn a computer on.
Mm.
So like,
same as my mum.
Yeah. So I wasn't worried about them reading stuff as much because they would read tabloids and stuff, but it's not as bad as online, like social media. And I sat there and bawled my eyes out because I was like, what have I put my friends under? Like, I chose, like, you know, we chose to go on this show. We chose to have, like, whatever potential backlash. It's not, doesn't make it okay. We put ourselves in that situation, but they didn't ask.
They didn't. They didn't get a choice in it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, ITV Welfare can only go so far, but I don't think it covers friends and family and what they could potentially go through.
It does. I know it doesn't cover friends and family, you know, and that's one thing I think, you know, for my sister to read that people wanted me to kill myself over and over again. I'm her little sister. I'm her, like, she's looked after me every day of my life. She's been on my phone. Like, she's there. I lived with her for, you know, we are best friends. And for her to have to read that is just unheard of. Like, why do people think, like, I love that obviously Love Island's got this big debate around it. I love people that can go into work and talk about it. I love the fact that, but it doesn't need to turn into hate.
No, of course.
Like, there's a opinion, point. But there's an opinion. Yeah, have an opinion. Think I'm a brat. Cool. There doesn't need to come to a point where you're telling me I need to take my own life.
No, because, like, in reality, nothing either of us did was that, or any of the islanders did, is that deep that can warrant that.
No.
Like, literally, you can have an opinion, you can hate me, can not like either of us and think what we do, or like what we do now, is not good. But, you know, put that in a constructive way.
I'm all here for constructive criticism, you know.
Yeah. And, you know,
I might tell you to F off, but I'm here for it.
It's just part and parcel of life. But, like, you know, I remember getting that notification from you, like, when the first time I got to speak to you properly since leaving the villa. And I remember seeing, like, Faye Winter's FaceTime you, and I was like, oh my God, like, I finally get to speak to you. And I was really excited. I remember opening it, being really happy, and you were just sat there bawling your eyes out. And I remember, like, it being hard because I wanted to help you, but I didn't know how to help you because I didn't know how to help myself.
Yeah.
In that situation. And I feel like it's the same with friends and family when they are, like, because they want to help you, they want to be there for you, but because they don't know.
Understand.
Or they don't know how to navigate themselves, they don't know what they can do to help you or to even make it any better if they can.
No, and then to top it all off, like, I literally moved up country away from all my friends, all my family, to be with Teddy, like, all my dogs, like, that's my get out. That's my getaway every single time. Go and walk my dogs.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
Go and spend time on my own. Go and walk my dogs. I don't know why I'm so emotional on this podcast.
Sorry.
I don't know what's wrong with me.
I'm trying not to cry, because if I start crying, you'll get even worse. And then when you get worse,
really
I'll get
ugly
worse.
Criers together. I don't have any of that.
No,
I've got no one. And this is like why my hardship is, like, still, and I'm still trying to navigate, like, I'm a year on and I still have down dark days that I'm never going to get away from, that I feel so lonely, like, I feel so alone because I've got my friends and family are 2.5 hours away.
Yeah,
you know, I've moved my whole life. I wanted to be with Teddy, that's what I wanted to do, so I moved my whole life up here. I don't have, like, you know, if he nips out to go and see his family, I sit at home completely on my own. And that's, like, in your own thoughts when people then, like, you... And it's so hard because people say, don't go looking for it. Don't go looking for the hate. But it's so hard when you're, like, trending on Twitter, and when you're having a down day, it's so hard to see the positives.
Yeah, of course. And especially if you're sat there on your own.
Yeah.
Because I think, like, for me, the 5 days of quarantine were the hardest. I think when you go, when they say don't go looking for hate, I completely get that. Like, I remember being told consistently, don't go reading Daily Mail comments. Mm. I remember that as number one thing to be told when I left the show. And I think one thing that Islanders this year won't have to worry about because of the COVID rules of change is that I remember, because I live on my own, spending 5 days of quarantine, sat by myself, couldn't talk to anyone, couldn't see anyone. It was unfair for me to have Vienna in my house because I couldn't take her out for a walk. So what was I going to do? I was sat on my phone for 5 days straight, looking for hate, reading Daily Mail comments. And then when you started that habit and getting into that rut, how do you get yourself out? Like, everyone thinks in this industry, in this lifestyle, because you're out all the time, you're socializing, that you're not lonely. Yeah. But loneliness isn't about having tons of people around you. It's about having, like, the people around you that are there for you consistently and will, like, genuinely do care about you, because in reality, not that many people do. Mm. They're just either there for clout or they're there because they're paid to be there.
Exactly that, isn't it? And it's so hard, like, you know, and I always say, like, I'm always going to be seen as, like, you know, we came out and our relationship was always questioned, always, always questioned, like, when are they going to break up? It's so fake. When's he, like, you know, when's he going to ditch her? And I'm not being funny, but I'm always now going to be seen as the bad person in our relationship. Like, and that's really hard as well. You know, me and Teddy don't put each other on each other's social media. Oh, they've broken up. Oh, he's finally got rid of her. Oh, yeah, he's finally seen their true colours. And I'm like, hang on a minute. Like, so the people that, you know, you guys saw only positives in that show and that got shone a light on, you reckon that they're under that spotlight and they're shining, they're gleaming 24 hours a day? No, we all have our slip ups. Like, but you will never be able to comprehend that, because for you, you've only seen them in one light. You've only seen one character. So it's really weird how this all comes around. And then we've got Love Islanders coming out this year that don't have to quarantine, because we were in the bubble and we obviously were in COVID. They don't have that 5 days. They literally are straight out. They've got their own rules. And it's so, I worry for them, because regardless of, I feel like an older big sister. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's so weird, because I'm like, everyone's like, are you jealous that they're coming? No, like, I'm not. There's no one out there. There's no one out there like you. There's no one out there like me. There's no one out there that wants to do charity work like we do charity work. There's no one out there that I want to do property. And I know that you want to do politics and weird
stuff. No judgment on that, though.
I don't understand it. So it's not my passion, and that's okay. Yeah.
But that's the thing as well, like, right? Do you know one thing that always cracks me up every year, and I see it with every Islander, every series, is that are you worried about your career? Are you worried about your deals drying up because the next lot have come out? And it's like, well, no, because, you know, you've just said, we found our niche, and I haven't seen anyone this series or potentially the next series after that's even going to be able to compete in what we want to do.
Well, I don't have a clue what you talk about half the time. So, I mean, no one's going to try and compete with you there.
There's a market for that, I think.
There's a market for that. And, like, you know, I feel like I'm already setting ways. Like, I'm already setting the pathway for others. You know, I did a massive campaign with Peter. Since that, they have then, you know, chosen to do other campaigns with other Islanders. So I feel like I'm already carving my path, that their previous Love Islanders that are, you know, copying what I've done. And that's cool. Like, that's fine. I'm glad that more people are speaking out. I don't see it as I'm not winning. I see it as, actually, I'm obviously clearly doing good because other people are now wanting to promote it as well.
But you are winning because you're the OG.
OG of brown lipsticks and fuck off.
Do you know what, actually? I think, what was it? One thing that did crack me up is I always got messages about your brown lipstick.
I had hideous lips in the show. Like, what can I say? The worst thing was, right, as well for me, is I think, like, as you watch it, so we obviously watched the first episode. I was so skinny. I looked great. Like, I'd literally been on this, like, whole health kick. Like, I literally got down to under 8 stone, very unhealthy. It was disgusting. Anyway, whilst we're in the show, I put on 2 stone. Obviously, I show my weight in my face.
Okay.
And obviously, we get weighed before we go in the show, and we get weighed when we get out of the show. So yeah. I know that I put on 2 stone.
And I'm like, at the end of it, my lips had been bust because Aaron pied me in the face so hard that he bust my lip filler. I've put on so much weight. My hair extensions, well, they were gone because obviously it got dyed bright blue
or
in a
I
challenge.
Fitted them for you.
Or you had to fit them for me because that didn't happen because of the bubble. Like, I was literally falling apart. I came out and I remember looking in the mirror and I was like, I've never felt so minging in all my life.
When we watched back those episodes and we were talking about our lips, I had to explain to you, didn't I, that in the heat, they swell. So, yeah, but they were massive.
Well, not just that, but also as well, I definitely went to a practitioner that was like, yeah, give me your money. Like, I'll put more filler in your face. Like, that doesn't make a good practitioner, guys, just saying. You need to make sure you go to a practitioner that says, no, you've got enough. Now, my practitioner now, I've got a mil in my lips. I've got 1 mil and he point blank refuses to do any more.
And I'm zero.
Yeah, well, you've got massive lips already. Yeah, great. They're so juicy and voluptuous.
I think we had the same call with our practitioners when we phoned them up after we had them dissolved. I remember phoning Zara and hating on her so much. She was like, you're so dramatic. But I remember being like, I hate you. And I was like, I have to go out in public looking like this. What if the Daily Mail write an article saying, why is my face look like I've been smoking 40 a day for 50 years? Like, what's going on? She was like, it's very dramatic. They'll come back to normal. It's fine. But like, no, you know, out of everything that's come out of the show with like the whole like lip filler and stuff, at least we can talk about it and encourage safe practitioners.
Safe filler. But I feel like as well, it's so weird because like a lot of people this year are like, oh, the cast, like they're so natural.
Oh, fuck off.
No, the girls still off. Have filler and they've still got work done. Like, and that's okay. Like, why does it matter if somebody wants to do something to their own body? This is what I can't get my head around. What, so because Paul, I don't even know a bad surname, that's 40 and bold and living in his mum's loft apartment. I don't know. I'm now loft. Don't even know what to call it right now. And I do know properties. Like, literally living in a shed, thinks that I will look better if I don't get Botox done. Well, I'm sorry, Paul, but I'm sorry to break it to you. I think I named him Peter to begin with, but I'm still going to get it fucking done.
That's the thing. Also, he's lying.
Everyone
has better Botox.
Yeah. Oh,
love a bit of Botox. But the thing is, what cracks me up is that the men that comment on the female Islanders' appearances saying they don't find them attractive or like putting their female Islanders' worth on their attractiveness to them, who the fuck do you think you are?
Yeah.
Like, what? Do you think our entire existence is to be attractive to you?
I'm not being funny. Do we not need to take it back to the good old days of beauties in the eye of the beholder?
I would prefer not to go back to those old days because they didn't have Botox in the old days.
Well, it wasn't that long ago.
How fucking far back are we going?
I'm not sure. But I am my beholder because I'm the one that has to look in the mirror every day. And if I want to get something done, believe me, I'm going to get something done.
I just don't like this whole, no, like, one thing that really irritated me about the tweets, you know those lovely photos we got done before we went in?
Oh, yeah, when my Botox had dropped.
Those lovely photos. No, but, and I hated, I remember this year especially, going back on loads of tweets because people were saying, I love that all of these photos, unphotoshopped, unedited, they look so natural. And I said, no, I think they're edited to look bad. Because I've never met an Islander that looks like their photos.
People didn't even think I was the same Islander that went into the show that was on my picture.
You don't look the same at all. And one thing as well is that everyone's like, oh, but they're not face-tuned or whatever, edited like the Instagram photos. I think every Islander I've met looks more like an over-photoshopped version of themselves than they do in those unedited versions of the Love Island shots.
Yeah, and this is where I think we boil down to as well a point of actually, I don't agree with photoshopping. I don't photoshop any of my images. I don't face tune them. I don't have any of the apps. I don't believe in it. I don't believe in it. And I, you know, people always say to me about, you know, what would you do? Like, but you use filters on Instagram. And I'm like, yeah, because it clearly states at the top, I'm using a filter.
Yeah, of course.
I'm okay with that.
Disclaimer.
But I do feel like that, you know, with this whole perception of social media and stuff, that there should be, like, if you're using those apps, they should be disclaimed on social media.
One thing that's so, it's a double-edged sword, this industry, especially for women, because if you're not perfect, you get trolled.
Yeah.
If you're over-edited, you get trolled. Which one is the right one? What is the right thing to do?
Yeah.
And it's hard.
I just feel like, how can young people, or how can people aspire to look like people that don't even look like themselves because they've edited it? That's my big thing. I just feel like, get it on there. Make sure that it's disclosed if you've edited something. If you've cinched your waist in, then somebody needs to know the fact you've cinched your waist in. Like, that's not okay. Like, let's try. I always say, like, I am perfectly imperfect. I'm perfectly happy with that.
And that's the thing. Maybe media needs to take some responsibility and actually promote Islanders that, you know, are a bit more open and unfiltered with their lives and with their Instagram.
I feel so.
But on that note, thank you for being completely unedited, unfiltered, and for being the first guest on my podcast.
Always, darling, always.
Love you lots.
Love you.
Thanks for listening to Girls Know Nothing. You can listen on Spotify and wherever you normally get your podcasts. Please follow and leave a review, and I'll hopefully see you again next week.